I was born bold.
Deliverr. Simplify your restaurant's ordering and delivery capabilities. Find out more. Visit deliverr.com.au. Worth. All the workshop equipment you need on the go. Download the new Worth app today.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Oh, it's a very big day here. It's a big day in the media landscape. One of the greats, one of the doyens and icons of the media world farewells the landscape today, and you'll see it all tonight. AFL 360, Mark Waitley. Mark Robinson, Jared Waitley. You'd be thrilled with that, Jared. Very special open mic. They turn the tables on him and interview Mike, and it's on tonight at 8:30. It's emotional. I've seen some of the little grabs. It's teary. It's heart-wrenching stuff. And we'll try and get the same sort of tears out of him this morning. Welcome to you, Michael.
Hello, Gaz. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Like old times, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is like old
times.
Where's
my coffee?
It's coming.
On its way.
It's on its
way. Got any donuts?
Yeah, we have. We've got a whole stack of them from our good friends at Canvas House. Just dropped the whole stack of them in. So we thank them very much. Thank you, Nash.
I was worried that you'd brought the donuts in with you this morning. I thought, hang on, he's going to give us donuts.
Well, that's what you've been doing for 45 years.
How are you feeling? Yeah, I mean, honestly, you've already done your 360 stuff.
Yeah.
So that's in the can, as they say in the game. Yeah. But that's going to be great tonight. So this is your last.
I've been uneasy today, I must say. I've got a few things, like the show's on tonight. I'm with you two this morning on very powerful breakfast radio.
Yes.
I've got a couple of other commitments. I think I'll be glad when it's over.
Has it been over for a while with you, though? Like in terms
in
of.
In my head.
Yeah, no, but checking out of the media and. It's sort of been like a progressive thing for you,
has it? Yeah, I finished at the Herald Sun in 2011, which is 9 years ago.
Wow.
And I thought that open mic might be a transition period, like might get me through, say, 18 months or 2 years.
Yep.
And in fact, it's lasted 11 years, so I've got to be thankful for that.
Hey, Mike, we often talk about journalism and journalists and story reporting and that type of thing. You're old school, you're old fashioned, you got brought up in a completely different era of football. Are the things that were important to you as a young journalist all those years ago still what you believe are the foundation of journalism today?
Yeah, but I can't speak for the current practitioners, can I? I can only speak for what was important to me, and I would hope that the same values still apply. I mean, not everyone would have that rosy view of me, I must say. I think there are plenty of people who mightn't have liked the way I operated.
No, but what is journalism then to you?
Well, journalism is finding out relevant information, interesting information, in a moral way, I reckon.
Right, and ethically.
Well, moral, ethically, yeah.
And
yeah.
Presenting the truth.
Presenting as close to the truth as you can find, yeah. You know this stuff, I say to journalism students when I speak to them, if in doubt, leave it out, which is a motto we should all work on, but we don't. I've admitted several times that on big stories, you do take an element of risk.
But you and your kind, I'm not just putting this on you, you and your peers back in the day took less risk than they do today. Today they just whack it on social media and then just go, oh, well,
they?
Like the young journos of today. The race to put it on Twitter.
Yeah.
They wear it as a badge of honour, irrespective of whether it's right or wrong.
It's like rumour-file Twitter, isn't it?
That's it.
But, geez, a lot of good stuff comes from there.
100% it does. But
they miss. The problem with this is you could get, notionally, the 100. You could have 100 cases and get 99 right, and if you stuff up one, it hurts you. And I've done that.
I don't reckon it hurts them that much today. Today's game.
It moves on pretty quickly.
Very quickly.
Back in your day, though, you were filing for, the paper at night time, the Herald in the afternoon. Now everybody, it's like 24/7. Like people are filing right throughout the course of the day. And now, as Gary rightly pointed out, like there's such a rush and a hurry to be the first to break a story that even sometimes when the story isn't solidified, let's get it out there because I want to be the first to actually send that information out there.
There's always been a thirst to be first. There's no doubt about that. But now there are so many journos that's intensified. And people probably do take more risks than they should, I think.
What's the biggest story you broke? What's the biggest story that you have to hang your hat on today?
Well, it's a long time ago. It was in 1983. And I wrote a story for the then Afternoon Herald in Melbourne, the big paper in Melbourne. I was the chief footy writer after Ralph Brown. And the story said that Calvin Templeton and Peter Moore were for sale for $1 million.
I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah. I do remember.
Now, they were two Brownlow medalists and two captains.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like saying Fife and Bontempelli.
Yeah. It was extraordinary.
It was. And you talked about taking risks with that. This is true. I was 3 weeks before I published that story because I just couldn't believe.
You held on to the story for three weeks.
Not the whole story, not the whole story, right. but the germ of the story.
Right.
Until I decided that we could run with it for 3 weeks.
Jeez.
Imagine if someone else had got that. I would have jumped off the bridge.
That must have been burning a hole in your pen pocket,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, it did. You know, you wake every – in the job that I did,
yeah.
not you blokes are sort of a different role, but the job that I did, if you woke up and you'd had an inkling of a story and someone else had it, it was like a crushing blow.
Mm.
You know, just so it
so
was,
that's that competitive. Like, again, today our listeners out there consume their media socially, digitally, right? So yep. they don't wait for the paper tomorrow. But in your day, the competitiveness between whether it was The Age and – was The Age and The Herald Sun, were they the only two?
No, there was the Afternoon Herald.
Right.
And there was the Sun News Pictorial.
Right.
They were the morning and afternoon papers out of Flinders Street.
Right.
And then there was The Age and The Australian.
Right. Yeah. So – you would. Yeah, you sat on a story, you put it in there, and then you just hope like hell that no one else had it.
Yeah, look, when you sort of recap, it's amazing to think. Probably the biggest thrill I had, even though it wasn't – the Moore Templeton one was the biggest story, but I remember when Royce Hart got the sack, I was working for the Herald, the Afternoon Herald, and I got a phone call at 20 to 9. And at 11:30 – we were heading up to Chinatown with the story on the front page of the paper to have lunch.
Really?
Now, that is an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, that is.
I'll just give it a mouth.
So give us some of the other big ones. Give me some of the other big stories that you've been involved in over the journey.
Oh, Port Adelaide coming into the AFL.
Yeah, big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing, in more recent times, Gaz, when I get asked this story, I think, how come they're all out of the 80s and 70s, 80s and early 90s? But I became more of an opinion person, right. I reckon.
Yeah. So the difference, there is a difference, isn't there?
Yeah, of course there is,
And so if you're on the beat and you're trying to break news and make and report the news as opposed to saying, well, there's the news and my opinion of it is this.
I really still genuinely love the chase and getting a big news story, but you can't just live on that. You can't say, look, hopefully there'll be a big one tomorrow. So I probably like to think that I had a balanced opinion and it was often forthright and that the opinion stuff was probably what I did most of in my latter years.
How important was it to you as a young journalist to build relationships with people in football?
Yeah, it's critical.
It's the most critical thing?
Because people, there's a view that there are deep throats out there and they get into go downstairs into the basement and ring people up and say, I've got this story for you. In my experience, it doesn't happen that way. It's your experience with people and your relationship with people that when you ring them and say, I've heard this, then they can throw some light on that. So they help you through rather than actually just hand deliver
it. Right, so they're not offering it to you, but if asked,
correct,
and you've got the appropriate relationship,
right,
you can develop.
And they will either do what Tim says, and I can't talk to you about that, or no, you wouldn't lie to me, Gaz, would you? I think most people that you trust, you genuinely believe are your friends, will say, look, I can't talk to you about that.
Did this happen a lot where you were given a heads up and leaked the story because others in at that club or wherever it might have been, they thought, okay, this is about to get out. I would rather Mike Sheen write about this and present this story than it got out in a different form?
No, I don't have an answer to that.
Right.
I'd like to say yes, but I'm not sure that's true. I didn't believe that there was a lot of leaking done.
Strategic
leaking.
Well, we picked up the paper last week. This is, you know, like in all the club presidents and chairmen have met during the day.
Yep.
Caro goes on classified that night with the content of that actual meeting. Now, that's obviously a leak.
Well,
isn't it?
No, but isn't it again that she would ring sort of 4 to 6 or 8 of those people that were involved?
Oh, no, I'm saying that. Yes, but then they've leaked the information out. I mean, that was a confidential meeting, so they go straight out. And I mean, that's my point. Surely that happened for you as
look,
well.
Yeah, it would go like, look, don't quote me on this, but you're not far away.
Yeah. So then you know you're
on. And the jigsaw comes together.
Is there any relationships that you haven't been able to reconcile?
Do you want them in alphabetical order?
No, this is serious because it's a thankless task, and you oftentimes you're telling stories or breaking news that people don't want to have out in the, yeah, in the public domain.
Well, look, I mean, Peter Dacos wouldn't take a call from me.
On the basis of?
On the basis, I think, of stuff that I wrote about him and when his career was on the wane. And I was probably a bit unfair on Dakes.
What did you write?
I was sort of pressuring him. I think a couple of my friends from Collingwood might have used me a bit to exert a bit of pressure on him.
What, to force him out?
No, not into necessarily retirement? Force him. To make him think about it. I just probably was an unwilling or unknowing participant in that. And because I wrote the stories, Dacos is entitled to blame me. But I genuinely wanted him to come on Open Mic because the highlights package would have been as good as anyone that's ever played the game.
Mm.
But he wouldn't do that.
He confronted you though too, didn't he?
I think so.
Right.
Physically.
You know the answer to that.
We're asking the question.
I was there that night.
Were you there?
Yeah.
What, the 3AW Christmas party?
Yeah, I was.
Was it any good?
Just a couple of old blokes going at it. So you come to Blows.
Oh, Blows. I got thrown out.
Well, we'll see. You got two.
You got three. Hang on. So what happened?
I was wilder in my 50s than I was in my teenage years. Thrown out of a Christmas party at 55.
Well, you two were there. You know what happened. A lot of people listening don't know what happened. How did it come about?
I don't actually. Do you know, Gary?
No, I don't. I was there, though.
I don't want to talk about that anyway.
Yeah, well, you did. Anyone else?
Mickey Maltese and I were genuine friends when he became coach of Footscray, the Bulldogs.
Yep.
And Mick, he would speak to me now. I sent him a message when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, to which he responded. But, no, he doesn't like the way I operate.
Right. That's okay. No, everyone doesn't. Not everyone gets liked in the industry.
No, I know. And there's no one that's done this job.
No, I think you got a pretty good. I think the fact that I think you've come out of it really well.
Unbelievably, because
it's respect at the end. And if there's always going to be a few that you don't get
on. Yeah. And I think if you're in the business that I've been in, you've got to have an opinion.
And you like to be liked.
Yeah, I do. The journos are the most sensitive people
aren't
on the
they?
Planet.
Oh, 100%.
Because Alistair Clarkson calls you precious.
He does.
Yeah. On the basis of what?
Of the long precious. I think that was an accumulation of things. I wouldn't dispute that.
No, that's fair enough. Hey, you know what the most important skill in life is? I am coming to grips with is self-awareness and understanding all that. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I've never disputed that.
I think you have over the time.
About occasions. Being precious.
Yeah, on occasions. I think. Yeah,
without foundation, I might say.
Well, we've got a lot to get through. Yeah. And we know tonight it's great. So the AFL 360 tonight, Jared and Rob have sat down with you and done a reverse open mic. And that's on at 8:30 on Foxtel. We'll be watching that. We're going to ask you who your best and most memorable open mics are. This is from my sister who is a journalist and run newspapers up in Sheffield. And she says, I'm loving the interview with Mike. Brought back great memories, breaking stories, being competitive with other mastheads. He's a true journo and a great newsman.
Oh, that's nice. What's your sister's name?
Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
There you go. Let's take a break. We'll be back. You can send through your questions. We've got a lot of them here for Mike as well. So, yeah, I genuinely am so happy to have you here today and to see you on your way out. And I've got to pay you for your piano. So here he is, Mike Sheen. We'll talk after this. I was born
bold. Deliverer. Simplify your restaurant's ordering and delivery capabilities. Find out more. Visit deliverer.com.au.
Worth's app makes mobile ordering easy. Download it now or visit worth.com.au.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Morning, Gary and Tim. Please pass on my sincere thanks to Mike for his massive contribution to the AFL landscape. I grew up with Mike on the Herald Sun Top 50 list, Talking Footy, Couch, Open Mic, and more recently Fun Fridays on SEN. He comes across as likeable, knowledgeable, and most importantly, a gentleman. All the very best, Mike. Tim from Brighton. And sometimes I can exaggerate. But not here. The amount of messages coming through, I hope you read these. I want you to read them because you should, and you should feel good about yourself because you've touched so many people. It is awesome reading these.
Are there any bad ones there?
Yeah. Well, there's always going to be a bad one. Yeah. This is like attending.
No, I'm not joking either. This is unbelievable what I'm reading here.
This is like attending your own funeral.
It is.
Stuff that's coming through here. And these are all the nice things that you should hear about yourself too. And this one, ask Mike this. You're coaching in a grand final, okay? Who do you go with? Do you go with the Wisp or Gary? You can only have one player in your team.
That's a question asked by the bloke who knows the answer.
I know the answer to that.
I think you'll go with Gary, though, because Gary...
You know, I love you, Tim.
But he could play, and I've examined his record in recent times, he could play centre-half forward and centre-half back. Mm. And if you ask him now, he could have been a big-bodied midfielder too in the modern era.
I know. Well, he could have been anything.
He could have been anything.
And why did you give us a cook in the paper today? On Sunday?
Yeah, why did you?
Well, John Anderson asked me about people that I wanted to get and couldn't get over the journey.
Yes.
And there were some obvious ones, like Plugger just won't do it, and Dakes, I've mentioned his story before. And then I weighed up about putting you to him because we are friends. And I said, no, I actually genuinely wanted Lyon and Watson because of our history. I sat next to Gary at his first Guernsey presentation night in the MCC.
That's right.
It was a committee room, wasn't it?
Way, way back we go.
And you,
mm-hmm.
when you didn't even know your own name, I interviewed you. You were about 14.
Across the road from St. Bernard's, where I lived at the time.
That's right.
With Barry Keane.
In your school uniform.
Yes, after
it
school.
It was the toughest 40 minutes of my life.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
I asked you in the finish, I said, what is your name? You said, I'm not telling you.
We found that old, I don't know where we found that Essen jumper from, but it was somewhere in the house, in Keemy's house.
Yeah.
He had a Jason recliner rocker. I sat in that and you draped the jumper over my stomach and then we took the photo and had a great old chat we did.
Oh, talking about
what,
those
are you
things
doing that, open mic now, are we?
Talking about those things that you do and the jumper, I interviewed Simon Madden before his first game.
Right.
We went out to St. Bernard's. Bob Cremeen was at the Sun and I was at the Age. And we went out there and I don't know whose idea it was, but anyway, Simon's got his school shirt and tie and blazer on. And we had him in shorts, footy boots and socks under the desk.
Yeah, dodgy ahead of his time.
How could anyone ask someone to do that now?
Couple of rapid firers because we don't want to get through. Who's the best you've seen? The best player?
Best player?
Yep.
The North Melbourne bloke.
Ahead of Matthews and...
Look, I saw these highlights the other night on 7...
North Melbourne bloke is Wayne Carey, by the way.
Geez, he was an unbelievable player. But when I was commissioned to do that for the AFL, to pick the best 50 players in the history of the game.
Yep.
And I wasn't trying to be clever. I mean, I'd always had this view that Carey excited me like no one else had done before. When Carey was on fire on the football.
More than Ablett?
It's a good question. Well, I don't know. I'm talking
on
instinct.
Okay.
My gut response was that Ablett was freakish, wasn't he? We all agree with that. Carey, to me, was the kid. You know, you were at school and the kid from year 12 would come down and play with when you were in year 9 and just like you and just dominate. You know, just sort of say, this bloke plays the game.
He just pointed to himself.
He was pointing
to himself.
It's a pity this isn't on TV, isn't it?
It is on tape. Don't worry.
You know, this notion of modest bloke here who keeps talking about himself.
Keep going.
So my one and two were Carey and Lethal.
Yep.
Mm.
But statistically, Lethal stands alone, doesn't he?
He does. Well,
900 goals and 8 best and fairest or something.
Extraordinary. Can I... most people wouldn't know this listening to this morning, though, but you actually left journalism for a period of time when worked for the AFL or the VFL back then. Okay.
Yep.
What did you learn that you didn't know about the game by doing that?
About the game or about how it was run?
About how it was run, the mechanics behind the whole thing. Was it an eye-opener for you at the time?
Yeah, because No, what was I there?
You weren't naive.
No, I was naive, but I mean, I had access to a lot of... I used to sit at the commission meetings.
That's right.
Yeah.
Taking notes?
Pardon?
Taking notes.
Making a contribution, Gary, on major issues.
Who was the boss? Was
Ross
that Jack?
Oakley was... I started with Jack Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
and then Ross Oakley came in, and I was on good... You know, that we liked each other.
We were colleagues there because I was working there.
You were up in doing country clinics or something, weren't you?
AFL. We were colleagues.
And the largesse probably struck me a bit. I mean, there's a lot... Well, the money... I think there's a lot of money being wasted at AFL House over the years. Because, you know, it just comes in. It was like until COVID came.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that experience?
Oh, yeah. I did. But in the finish... what did I leave? Oh, yeah, the Sunday Age started, and Steve Harris, who was the editor of the Sunday Age, asked me to go and work there.
Is it? You go.
And I think my instinctively, I'm a journo.
Yeah, I think you are too. You got the name of the Mike Sheehan media room, and then you moved on.
Funny story that, you know, when the day before that opened, I was around at AFL House, just on routine business.
Yep.
And the media centre used to be in the front. You remember where it was?
Yes,
in the foyer.
Yeah.
Right? Big red door with white writing on it. The Mike Sheehan Media Centre, which was to be opened the next day.
Yes.
Sheehan, Sheehan. I said to Glenda, who was my friend on the front desk, I said, you've need to get the painters back, honey.
Is there anyone in footy that you get, not intimidated, but you felt in awe of when you're in their company?
Good question.
You mean now or ever?
Over the journey. Who was the one that made you nervous?
There were lots over the journey. I mean, I've got to say that, I mean, I'm a kid in an old man's body. I mean, I still
there's
have
a
this
fan
sort of sense
inside
of reverence for great footballers.
Who was it then? Who is it?
Well, probably the Duck. You know, the funny thing is they say about not meeting your heroes. I'm not close to Duck. I wouldn't claim to know him well. But I sort of, he's a sort of a, it's difficult for him because there are a lot of people who are anti him because of what's happened in his private life. But just as I just treat him as a footballer, and he's the one that I would sort of have on an exalted plane as a footballer.
You're great mates with Robbie Flower.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I wasn't intimidated by Robbie.
No, but there was
it's difficult in what we do, what as journos do. You know, when people sort of say, oh, he's my mate. No, I never did that. I said, I like them. And we get on well, but Robert Flower was genuinely a mate of mine, and I genuinely loved him. I mean, I'm even a bit emotional now. Just the day he died, I mean, it was just a massive, almost personal blow. You know, how can this happen to such a good person? And there was it was genuine humility with Robbie Flower.
100%.
We used to play in a
tennis?
Suburban tennis club. Do you know this story?
No, I do know you play tennis.
At Burwood. It's just this local tennis club at Burwood. We play on a Tuesday night. And he would walk in, and he was the biggest name in the whole area. And then he'd come with his plate of sandwiches. And then we'd finish the match, and he'd be bagging the courts. And I'd look at him and sort of say, what is going on here? This bloke's supposed to be carted off the court.
Humble champion.
Yeah.
Stay here. We're loving this. Just hang on. We've got to get some news headlines.
The end track.
I'm loving having a chat with Michael Sheehan, who is a doyen. He's an icon, and it will always be. But he's going to have a little time down at the coast and play a bit of golf. And what are you going to do? Mosey around?
Going to watch you play the piano, apparently.
No, I won't be playing it. I just bought a piano off Michael. We shouldn't say that.
Have you paid me for that?
Not yet.
The $3,000 you promised?
Three.
Hey, what about this just came through on the temper text too, Mike? Listen to this. This radio segment is so good. It is undeserving of 2020. It is way too good. Thanks for putting a smile on our face this morning, gents. Mike, football without you is incomplete.
It is.
Wow.
I agree with that. And hopefully you're not lost completely. The open mic, of all the open mics you've done, and it's on tonight, let me just say it again. 8:30, Robbo and Jared interviewing you. So that's going to be fantastic. 504, Fox Footy. The Mark Jackson one is the one that people is that the one that people want to talk to you about most?
Yeah. And Warwick Capper.
And Warwick Capper, yeah.
And I didn't want to do either of them.
No. After you did the Jacko though, you didn't want to air it, did you?
No, untrue.
Okay, no, we'll clear that up.
Management said to me that he'd behave disgracefully and we won't run it.
Right.
I said, no, we've got to run it. So we can't have people in here and just show the ones that we like or where it's all been amicable and they're saying nice things. So you imagine him with that information about, I went to Fox and I did the interview and Sheehan didn't like it, so they won't run it. So I said, we need to do two things. We need to run it. We need to run it in its entirety and let people make their own mind up.
Is that the most difficult interview you've ever conducted? On open mic it would have been, yes.
On open mic it was, yeah.
Or was Kappa a bit more difficult?
No. Kappa was good. I just didn't think Kappa fitted the theme of the show.
He took the mickey out of it.
But he was, and his manager said, no, he wants to do it, right? And I said, yeah, but that's nice and blah, blah, blah. And then anyway, he said he promised he won't be a dill. He won't misbehave.
And?
Well, he did, but everyone loved it.
I know, and I get that with Warwick. But did you fear for your safety with Jacko? At any stage did you think he might clip me?
He wouldn't give his water bottle back, which... We all have, we, you know, we, before you go on, just have a drink, just freshen your mouth up.
Yeah.
And then the routine is they just come and take the bottle, and he shook his head. He said, "No, I'm hanging on to it." And they said, "You can't have it on the set." And he said, "No, I'm hanging on to it." And I thought, I would rather him punch me in the face than tip a bottle of water over me, right?
Yeah, humiliating.
And I thought that was a bit, I was a bit concerned a bit about weary. That for a while.
Were you on the couch back in Talking Footy days when Wolsey and Sheeds were on that same night?
Yeah, I was on the couch. Initially. I was.
Yeah, I know you were.
Talking Footy, I was the original.
Were, I know that, I know that, but were you there that night? Was that the most, that would have been the most tense of any Talking Footy that you ever did, surely?
Yeah, there was a few tense moments on
Talking Footy. There were, but that one in particular.
Yeah, they didn't like each other, did they? Well, that was the famous line, wasn't it? Where
about the snipers?
Wolsey said, "Not all." No, Sheedy said, "Not all the snipers were in Vietnam."
That's right. Yeah. Did you feel like you needed to be the Henry Kissinger that night?
I just let the big boys go, mate. Just watched on.
So what are you going to do now?
Well, it depends on what
you're going to miss it or not.
I'm
surprised with how not easily, but how you've been able to just remove yourself a bit.
Well, I think this year was becoming more and more difficult to get the people I wanted to get.
Yeah.
Right. And I love sitting down and conversing with people. If you said to me now, you two said, "Yeah, we'll come on, we'll do it next week," I would love that. I'd say, "Yeah, okay, I've changed my mind." But it was becoming, I was spending 3 and 4 hours texting and calling people to see if they'd come on.
Mm.
Some didn't like me, some wanted money, some said they don't want to be on telly. Mm. I thought if I go into next year having it, the job of finding 25 people and spending my entire winter, you know, having to chase people and sort of almost plead for them to come on, I don't want to do that.
Do you regret saying actually at the weekend that Mark Williams wanted to be paid and did Gary Hocking?
Gary Hocking sent me a note.
And?
He said, "Thanks." I think it didn't say throw me under the bus, but it was that to that effect. "Thanks for throwing me under the bus about a joke." I asked Gary Hocking 3 times over 3 years, would he come on open mic? And he said 20,000 every time. Is that a joke?
I said 50 when you asked me.
No, we offered you 50.
No,
I thought, no. I mean, my line has always been to that when people say about money. I said, Lethal did it for nothing.
Yeah. You
know, perceived to be the greatest player ever. Look, people have an argument. Kevin Bartlett used to say, "Why don't you pay? You get paid," he'd say to me. I said, "Well, we just don't." I mean, I suspect the people who go on Michael Parkinson's show don't get paid.
No, they're generally promoting something, though, aren't they? That's probably a difference.
That's true, yeah. So I think management paid Jackson, I think, because they wanted – there was a themed round.
Right.
And they wanted Jacko from the 80s. I paid Don Scott once. I paid him $2,000 out of my own pocket.
Did you?
To do the interview?
Yep, because Eddie was trying to get him. Remember that show Eddie had?
Yes, with Dermot on Fox.
Not only will we tell you what happened, we'll tell you why, and we'll tell you what happened next. Anyway.
Hey, we have got cameras operating at the moment. You know that.
That's okay. I owe Eddie a couple.
Hang around. We'll get to the bottom of that. We need to take a break.
Halfway through my story.
I know, but Gary needs to take a break.
Do you want to stay and do an interview with Mitch Duncan with us?
No.
As your final interview?
No. I'm on television at my employer tonight.
I know that.
All right.
That's probably them. Well, let us say on behalf of everyone.
Yes.
And I'm not...
I haven't finished that story yet.
Okay. Quickly finish that story.
So Don says, "Oh, well, Eddie Maguire wants me to come on and he's going to pay me." And I was a wrestler at the time because Eddie was wanting to turn his show into an interview program because the other one didn't work.
And just fade you out.
And I said, "Righto, Scotty, well, I'll pay you." Right? He said, "Well, meet me in this service station at Muruduck." And we're in the trailer park there, and I'm peeling off $50 notes to it.
By the way, Don declared this with the taxation department, just in case.
Yeah, it was only $2,000.
Right, okay.
Hey, Michael, I'm going to, if we can do this, we can print these out and send them to you. It'd be a beautiful way for you to walk out of this studio and then tonight and know how loved you were, broadly. And I say, and respected probably more importantly, but loved is coming through really loud and clear as well, so. Thanks so much. I know everyone in Melbourne was trying to get you on radio today and you decided to come and do us. So we
thanks, guys. Well, I've got history with both of you and I regard both of you as friends.
We are friends.
We love you and well done. Enjoy whatever the future brings and we hopefully will be a part of it. A break. Mitch Duncan is coming up.